This is Joe Sebilia from CSRWire.com, and we're talking to you today with Wayne Visser, author of The Age of Responsibility, and we're going to spend about maybe a total of 15 to 17 minutes with Wayne, separated into three areas of discussion. One would be a little introduction on Wayne and his work. The second part is what he's doing now, and the third part will be what he sees happening in the future and a little bit of a back and forth with Wayne and myself, and you can check out the recording in one of the three parts. So, Wayne, good morning. How are you?
Yes, hello. Good to be with you today.
So, Wayne, give our audience a little background on what's inspired you to concentrate your time and effort and academic interest into corporate social responsibility. Some of our listeners that are just getting engaged in the process might feel some sort of sympathy to what you, how it came about for you.
Well, Joe, as you know, I grew up in Africa, in Zimbabwe and South Africa, and there were a lot of things going on while I was growing up. And so at some level, I must have been conscious of many of the ethical dilemmas that we were facing. But it was really when I had to choose what to study that I had two main interests, and one was business. While I was at school, I'd started up a little business of my own, and I had a bit of a passion for that. And the other was spirituality. And somewhere in my head, I was trying to reconcile these two, and I chose business as the career. But ever since then, really was trying to reconcile them and say, is there a place for what I would today probably just call values in business? And towards the end of my business science degree, which was actually in marketing, I chose to start focusing on these issues and got involved with an organization called ISEC, which is the International Economics and Commerce Students Organization, and they organized some conferences on business and the environment. There was one on sustainable development in Japan that I attended in 1990 in the lead up to the Rio Earth Summit in 92. And so it really sparked my interest, and I did my dissertation for my honors on green marketing. And then I got into general management consulting as a strategy analyst for Capgemini, but found myself getting quite frustrated with that, not being able to focus on these issues of ethics and values. And so I actually came back and focused a bit for an intended master's on the idea of holistic business, which was taking its ideas from the theory of holism of Jan Christian Smuts, who was a South African statesman and a philosopher, and just trying to figure out what would it mean for a company or a business to be truly holistic. And so that was what got me going, and when I eventually left the sort of strategy consulting, I just decided to specialize, and so I did a master's in human ecology at Edinburgh University, and then started up KPMG's sustainability services, which I ran for 6 years, and went on to do the PhD in CSR, and it's just gone from there. So early roots, and it feels like I've been at it for most of my career, which is about 20 years now.
Well, geez, that was a really interesting introduction, Wayne, and I got a whole bunch of questions, and I'd like to focus on a couple of them. When you grew up in South Africa, were you there during the time when the United States activist movement was boycotting companies doing business in South Africa, and was that in your consciousness at all?
I was there at that time, although I moved to South Africa in 1978, and you recall the Sullivan Principles of Reverend Leon Sullivan came out in 1976, so that just predated me. I have to say, though, you know, I was 8 at the time when I moved there, and I wasn't really conscious of those sorts of business issues. It was only when I was at university studying business, and in fact, when I took a course in economics, it was development economics and started to learn about the labor practices, including some of these issues around boycotts by international companies and disinvestment around the issue of apartheid, that the penny really started to drop, that these discriminatory practices, just apart from being morally abhorrent, were just making no economic sense at all either. And later on, when I started to really research it, of course, I became aware that, you know, South Africa ironically played this role in kick-starting the ethical investment movement, which today has grown to some substantive proportions. Some estimates now say that one in every $8 in the U.S. is screened for ethical criteria. And a lot of that started with the churches and other groups in the United States back in the late 70s and the 80s.
Now, when you talk about holistic business and the idea that there's some intersection between business and spirituality, and then in your brief introduction, you said that it seemed to me that you were intimating that business and spirituality couldn't peacefully coexist. Help me understand what your point of view is in relation to whether or not they can, in fact, exist.
Well, I think I felt it then as a tension. It's sort of the sacred and the profane, really, in stereotypical terms. And today, I think a lot of what we're doing in this corporate sustainability and responsibility movement is trying to deal with that tension, trying to say that it is possible to do business with values and with perhaps even a spiritual perspective. And so I've been inspired by many of the business leaders who've been prepared to go out on a limb and actually talk about things like love in business. I remember reading a book by James Autry, who was a Fortune 500 CEO, and he wrote a book, a poetry book actually, called Love and Profit. So I found that very inspiring, and you can hear today Ray Anderson talking about love on the factory floor. So I do think it's possible. It's the sort of thing we're working towards, but we have to be a bit careful about language and about not alienating people, and just realize that you know, there is a tension between focusing on pure business objectives and, if you like, the more values-led agenda.
Tell us a little bit about what you're working on now. Where are you? What have you been concentrating on? What are you working on right now at the present moment?
Well, I'm based in London when I'm not traveling, and most of my work is in the areas of research, teaching, speaking, and work I do around CSR International. So the research and teaching is for Cambridge University for the Program for Sustainability Leadership, and indeed a lot of the research is on sustainability leadership and supporting their master's program that I helped to set up there. But I'm also teaching in Oxford and various other places, Warwick and in Australia and Germany and really wherever I'm invited to go. So that's that activity. CSR International is my organization, as you know, that I run. It's a social enterprise and is really trying to support what I call CSR professionals, students, and enthusiasts to give them resources to make it a place that they can come and they can get access to knowledge and information. And what I'm just most excited about at the moment, about to launch a diagnostic self-assessment tool that companies will be able to use to assess themselves against the CSR 2.0 concept, which, as you know, is at the heart of the new book, The Age of Responsibility, and is really about measuring themselves against how mature they are on the process. And so I'm quite excited about that.
Well, before we talk, I want to move into the book for a minute and then talk about what you see happening out into the future. I was struck by your really effective description of what happened in the financial crisis. And I was also struck by having you place it almost in the middle of the book closer to the front, and why you felt the need to describe to your readers what happened in this financial crisis, and why didn't you expand that? Could that have been the theme of the whole book? Would that have? Do you think you would have gotten more? I don't know if it's the word is publicity or more attention had you made that connection between the financial crisis and CSR throughout the whole book instead of having it as a separate section.
Well, I did it in the chapter which was The Age of Greed, and I think probably if I had done the whole book and maybe even called it The Age of Greed, it may have got more publicity. But the reason I didn't want to do that is because I think the danger is it gets stuck in a very negative agenda. And although some of what we see in business is as a result of a culture and an ethic of greed and what I call a defensive approach to CSR as a result, I really don't think that's the whole story. And so that, for me, was only one of the ages and stages of CSR. And I wanted to put it in its context, to say that we do need to be aware that there's a fundamental problem with our current capitalist system, with the way we've designed the financial markets and the incentives that we have. But I also wanted to say that there are many other activities going on and a lot of progressive examples of some things that I think point the way to the future.
Let me ask you, if greed and fear are fundamental motivations in man and in the manner in which we organize ourselves in society, the opposite, is the power of the opposite equal to greed and fear?
Well, it's interesting. I'm certainly not suggesting that we will suddenly lose the human capacity for greed. And in fact, my first book was called Beyond Reasonable Greed. So I think there's an element which says that greed is something that, if we understand it as being an appetite or a hunger for achievement, for many things, doesn't have to be a bad thing. But it's when greed becomes unreasonable, in other words, when it becomes destructive like a cancer cell, that we really need to question it quite seriously. So, I think it is a powerful motivation, but it likewise, the opposite, if you want to put it the opposite scale, is sort of an altruistic drive. I think that is as powerful, if not more so, because that can really tap into people's passion and a sort of an unlimited source of inspiration.
So how do you make the connection between the opposite of greed as in terms of altruism and providing for the quality of life for people? In other words, how can we, there was a word you used to describe CSR practitioners earlier that I found interesting, and I want to listen back.
Enthusiasts,
right? So how do we mobilize the enthusiasts of CSR that might have this more altruistic feel to it, and have them integrated into their business enterprises to a point where it gets more widely accepted?
Well, I think part of it is just perhaps even starting to change the language. So not putting it necessarily in a CSR box. I think there's a role for leaders to start to say it's okay to talk about emotions in the workplace. It's okay to feel passionate about things. It's it's okay to care. You know, at its most basic, I have a definition of responsibility, which is simply the choice we make to respond with care. And that is really what we should be striving for in business. So some of my other research, which has been on what is it that creates effective change agents, suggests that there's a really powerful energy we can tap into if we allow people to feel like they're making a difference. And this is a trick I think that many companies have missed by trying to rationalize and take the emotion out of some of these issues and say that we're only doing this because there's a business case. They fail to tap into that that powerful sort of inspirational force in people. And so I think getting the language right is important. I think having some leaders that are prepared to go out on a limb is important. And then just having the right source of incentives so that people aren't being punished for the sort of more altruistic behavior. I have to just say as a caveat, though, that I'm also not relying on human nature changing and everybody becoming angels. I think what we have to work very hard at is changing the rules of the game, the incentives in the macro system, in the economy, and so on, so that actually doing the right thing and moving towards a sustainable and a responsible future is the easiest thing to do, and you get rewarded for doing that.
Well, that's a very good point. Now, do you think that there's a significant, since we're not going to be able to change human nature as fast as we're able to change public policy, where do you see public policy initiatives advancing globally that are responding to this feeling in a way that's accelerated than other parts of the world?
Well, I think one of the interesting initiatives I've been involved in that gives some hope, I would say, despite all of the doom and gloom around climate change, I've been involved with a group called the Corporate Leaders Group on Climate Change. And this is a group of around 30 CEOs in Europe of major companies, multinationals. And what they've been doing is working with government to try and break the deadlock that exists on climate change, because governments are saying they can't put forward progressive long-term policy because they'll get lobbied by business in a negative way. And business is saying they can't make the changes, especially in technology, because they need a long-term investment horizon. So by working together and creating the right sort of messages in the market for each other, they've managed to break that deadlock, and we've seen now some of the most progressive legislation on climate change coming out of the UK, and the EU is not far behind. And so where I see the policy agenda changing is that we're starting to get these long-term horizons, setting targets for 2050. You know, those are the sorts of things that give me hope. And then there's far more interest than ever before among governments in supporting ideas around social enterprise, around social business, innovation, these sorts of things. And I think that's another hopeful sign.
Well, Wayne, we got about a minute left before we have to adjourn. And is there any last thoughts for the future that you'd like to share with the audience? Some of the things that companies can do. Some of other than reading your book and other than being on CSRWire.com, help us give us one last thought on what some of the, our listeners can do.
Well, for me, it boils down to a very simple two-part test, really, that we should all, as companies and people working in this field, be subjecting ourselves to. And the first part is admission, and the second part is ambition. So the first is, are companies and leaders of companies really prepared to admit the extent to which they are part of the problem? We have to face up to the fact that virtually all of the indicators, social, environmental, and ethical, are still headed in the wrong direction, and that our lifestyle, our production and consumption patterns, fueled by business, are what is at the heart of that problem. So admit the extent to which we're culpable. And then the second part is ambition. be prepared to go out with very bold visions and objectives, audacious targets, things like Walmart saying 100% renewable energy and zero waste, things like Unilever saying double in size and halve the ecological footprint of the company. We need these kind of stretch targets now to really jolt us out of our complacency that we've sort of settled into. The problem being that most big companies now know how to tick all the CSR boxes and feel quite happy with themselves and get patted on the back, but it isn't turning the problems around. So admission and ambition, and let's try and make CSR, however that's understood, to really be part of the solution and not a smokescreen or a cover-up for hiding behind the problems.
Well, thank you very much, Wayne. I think that we could spend a lot more time, and I'm looking forward to reading some of your posts on CSR Wire and also following you on Twitter and Facebook and see what else is happening. So this is Joe Sebilia with Wayne Visser, and this concludes today's broadcast. Thank you.
Thank you.